Exodus 5. And I would want to entitle this conversation, Bad Day at God's Work. Every one of us, once in a while, we've had a bad day at work. I've been able to borrow a few thoughts, a couple of thoughts from several people. Charles Swindoll, in his book, Moses, a Man of Selfless Dedication. F.B. Meyer, in his book, The Life of Moses. And a Baptist preacher by the name of John Hamby. I've been able to borrow a couple of thoughts from them to help us with our conversation this evening. A little background. Prior to the events of chapter 5, Moses has gone through a process of sorts with God. I mean, they've been fighting over, Moses and God have been fighting over, if Moses is going to be the appropriate vessel for God to use to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. And after all the pushing and shoving, you know, eventually God prevails over Moses' reluctance and doubt and, you know. And I guess Moses takes a deep breath and says, squares his shoulder and says, come on, let's do this thing. And takes on the task. And as much as God had warned him and outlined how the task would look like, and, you know, the outcomes of this assignment that he was giving him, I guess Moses must have had, you know, he had told him it's going to be a little difficult, but Moses must have, you know, gathered together a little optimism and said, you know, let me take on this job. However, one thing leads to another and the situation becomes interesting. You know, interesting means different things to different people. When the British say interesting, it means, I don't know what to make up about this situation. When a Kenyan says interesting, I don't know what they mean. But it becomes interesting. And so, but before we delve into the drama that unfolds in chapter 5, allow me to ask, have you ever had a truly bad day? Have you ever had a day that went from bad to us? Maybe if you haven't, you will appreciate. There's a little video I thought we could look at to remind you of the day when your day went from bad to us. I think if it's okay, we can play that little clip. Please bear with where the clip comes from. Well, God can use anything. I hope it's gonna play. All right. Yeah, I suspect it's gonna play. Okay. I hope it's gonna play. I'm praying it plays. I've moved from hope to. Okay. Yeah, there it goes. Awesome. Well, bear with the evil part. Believe me, there's somebody working there. May God have mercy on his soul. Wow, this man enjoying his work until. Well, because they're getting gross and maybe we could survive this one. Wow. All right. Okay. Hold up. Oh, no, this one is interesting. Okay, that's okay. Let's kill it there. Have you ever had a truly bad day? Have you ever had a day that went from bad to worse? If so, you'll be able to identify with Moses in chapter 5. See, Moses accepted the call of God and secured the release of his father-in-law to go and, you know, lead the children of Israel out of bondage. And on his way, he meets with Aaron, who was his brother. This is in chapter 4, verse 27. And it is, you know, encouraging to note that how God works, you know, from both ends to make his plans come into being. When Moses arrives, Moses and Aaron summon all the elders of the Israelites that were in Egypt, and they have this conversation. And actually, Moses, you know, shows them a little sign to show them that he's legit and stuff. And they believe him. They believe him. This is chapter 4. They believe him. And that was probably the easy part of the assignment. And now it was time for him to go and take care of the interesting part of the assignment, and that is to stand before Pharaoh and relay God's message to Pharaoh. The acceptance of the elders and the people was reassuring, but confronting Pharaoh was a different story altogether. In fact, Moses's bad day began when he gained audience with the king. Let's read chapter 5. We will read a couple of verses, probably the entire chapter, if you can survive it. Exodus 5, verse 1 says, after that, Moses, just a moment. Says, after this presentation to Israel's leaders, Moses and Aaron went and spoke to Pharaoh, and they told him, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go, so that they may hold a festival in my honor in the wilderness. Is that so? Retorted Pharaoh. And who is this, the Lord? Why should I listen to him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. But Aaron and Moses persisted, and the God of heavens has met with us, and they declared, so let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness so that we can offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. If we don't, he will kill us with a plague or with a sword. Pharaoh replied, Moses and Aaron, why are you distracting the people from their tasks? Go back to work. Look, there are many of your people in the land, and you're stopping them from their work. The same day, Pharaoh sent this order to the Egyptian slave drivers and the Israelite foremen. Do not supply any more straw for making bricks. Make the people get it themselves, but still require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they are crying out, let us go and offer sacrifices to our God. Load them with more work. Make them sweat. That will teach them not to listen to lies or to go and protest on Mondays. So the slave drivers and foremen went out. Sorry, that's not in the Bible. Went out and told the people, this is what the Pharaoh says. I will not provide any more straw for you. Go and get it yourself. Find it wherever you can. But you must produce this just the same quarter of bricks as before. So the people scattered throughout the land of Egypt in search of stubble to use as straw. Meanwhile, the Egyptian slave drivers continues to push hard, meet your daily quota of bricks, just as you did when we provided you with straw, they demanded. Then they whipped the Israelite foremen they had put in charge of the work crews. Why haven't you met your quotas either yesterday or today, they demanded. So the Israelites' foremen went to Pharaoh and pleaded with him. Please don't treat your servants like this, they begged. We are given no straw, but the slave drivers still demand, make bricks. We are beaten, but it isn't our fault. Your own people are to blame. But Pharaoh shouted, you are just lazy, lazy. That's why you're saying, let us go and offer sacrifices to the Lord. Now get back to work. No straw will be given to you, but you must still produce the full quarter of bricks. The Israelites' foreman could see that they were in serious trouble when they were told you must not reduce the number of bricks you make each day. As they left Pharaoh, Pharaoh's court, they confronted Moses, who was waiting outside for them. Then Pharaoh said to them, the foreman said to them, may the Lord judge you and punish you for making us stink before Pharaoh and his officials. You have put a sword into their hands, an excuse to kill us. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested, why have you brought all this trouble on your people? Lord, why did you send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh, as you have spoken, he has been even more brutal to your people, and you have done nothing to rescue them. May God bless the reading of his word. When you have a truly bad day at work, and you must recognize that Moses was not doing his work, he was doing God's work. He was right at the center of God's will. Right at the center of God's will. See, when you're having a bad day and you suspect you are within God's will, I need you to understand and recognize that, first and foremost, that the presence of difficulties in those bad days is not always an indication that we are not in God's will. It's not always an indication. There are times when bad things and difficult things happen to us, and it's an indication we have stepped outside God's will. But there are times when it is not an indication. The sin is a dramatic one. It starts with two 80-year-old men standing before the most powerful man on earth. And they make this demand, let my people go on behalf of this God. You see, that demand they made was the start of a bad day. And it all went downhill thereafter. In verse 2, we find Pharaoh's response. And Pharaoh said, who is this? Who might this the Lord be, that I should obey his voice? I do not know him. I don't even want to know him. And I will not let Israel go. I mean, this was, you know, I normally say, my younger brother the other day, he's not born again. Oh, he got, you know, he found the Lord a couple of days ago, but before that, he wasn't born again, definitely. And there's a time he was like, I've discovered something interesting in the Bible. And he tells me, I've discovered the first, the chairman of hashtag Majeuri, you know, party. I mean, the chairman of, you know, this, I don't know what's Jeuri in English. What's Jeuri in English? Rude. Yeah, the first rude guy in the Bible, you know, was Cain. You know, when Cain was told, where is your brother? He says, am I my brother's keeper? He was the chairman of Team Majeuri. This was now the general secretary. He's like, who is this Nyef Nyef? Who is this the Lord that I should obey him? So, Pharaoh's response is completely negative. Pharaoh's response is characterized by cynical arrogance. And the point with Pharaoh's response was, he didn't want to obey. He said, I'm not going to obey this God. He understood that these men were not presenting him a request, but a mandate from one greater than himself. So his response was, I'm not going to. And we need to understand who the pharaohs were. These were men. A pharaoh was a man that had unbridled power. I mean, for him, Egypt existed. For him, the Nile flowed. For him, men lived and died. For him, vast armies of priests and magicians, you know, and courtiers wrote and ministered, according to the words of S.B. Meyer. The world revolved around him. you know, and some of you have watched The Gods of Egypt. Born-again Christians shouldn't watch. See, at once the situation worsened for the children of Israel. That same day, Pharaoh communicates in verse 6, I want you to make this, change these conditions for these people because they seem to be lazy. And I want you to note that all these developments that I'm going to outline are taking place within 24 hours. The same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters not to supply brick or not to supply straw, rather, and for these gentlemen, these people that were working. And so the day begins to become worse. See, as desperate as the plight may have been for the children of Israel, being slaves, it was about to get worse. Pharaoh's response was to make their slavery more bitter, their bondage heavier, their task more difficult. And Pharaoh, rather than releasing them, tightened his grip. I don't know if some of you have ever tried to preach to somebody about Jesus and they even become more hostile to you. Your friendship becomes even more difficult. I think it's a clear indicator that the devil is panicking in their lives. Right? And this was an indicator that Pharaoh was panicking. Sometimes things have to get a whole lot worse before people are ready to hear the truth or before they turn around. The answer to the request of Aaron and Moses came in the form of additional work in order that the people would no longer have time to listen and consider such preposterous ideas. What had been difficult now became impossible. See, now they had to carry out the same quota of work without the normal supplies. Finally, they could not stand it anymore, can't stand no more. They decided to form a little team to go and negotiate with Pharaoh, the Israelites. And so they chose their team of 11 people to go and have this dialogue with Pharaoh. And you all know, as we've read, what was the outcome of that dialogue. The result was, as you might have expected, Pharaoh refused. And you know, Moses and Aaron, the principals of the children of Israel, were waiting outside the palace to hear what would be the outcome of the conversations. And so they could see the foreman now coming out, the team. And the team was not amused. This is what they told Moses and Aaron. Remember, these are the people who they were so sure at the beginning of the day that they were about to go and do God's will. What better place can you be other than being in God's will, at the center of God's will? I mean, I normally preach that the safest place to be is within God's will. We all want to be within God's will. And Moses and Aaron were right at the center of God's will. Listen to what they were being told. Let the Lord look on you and judge you, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh, in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hands to kill us. They are not being praised. They are not being, admired for being at the center of God's will. Now, good people, sometimes when you have that bad day and you've woken up, done your devotion, you're trying your best to be within God's will, and things move from bad to worse, The temptation many times is to begin to ask yourself, where did I go wrong? What? And it's based on a theology that has been propagated, that whenever you are within God's will, then all that accompanies you is goodness and mercy and well-being and prosperity and increase. And if you're, these things are not happening, if you're having a bad day, then there's some sin you have committed somewhere. That wasn't the case with Moses and Aaron. There's some of us who will even now go and look for that preacher who will be able to identify the curse that was thrown on you, and you know where you are exed, and you know you'll identify that. Do you have an uncle who you know lives on the right side of your shags? Of course, there's an uncle who lives on the right side of our shags. I say he's the one. So plant a seed, we sort out the whole issue. Well, sometimes all that you are done is just to be in God's will. And so can you be in God's will when you're going through difficulties? Sometimes you can. And I sense there are people here that may be going through, you set out to do God's will. And you are sure this is what God wanted you to do. But, you know, things have moved from bad to worse. And you're beginning to ask yourself questions. Did I hear God correctly? Am I doing the right thing? Is it what are those curses that come through the family line? Is there an ancestor of mine that made covenants with some demons somewhere that are haunting me? You're a child of God, for heaven's sake. Those things are the ones that should be worried about you, because you have more power than those things. He who lives in us is greater than he that is in the world. But sometimes there could be difficulties. The second thing I want us to recognize, because my time is quite spent, is when you are having a bad day, you need to recognize that God does not have to work according to our expectations or our timelines. No, He doesn't have to work according to our expectations or our timelines. The mistake of the four men and perhaps the children of Israel as a whole is they presumed how God would work. He did not work the way they anticipated, and they were offended. So we Christians can also experience the same uncertainty. If we have certain expectations of how God should work in certain situations. See, for most people of faith, we expect that because we have tithed, because we have prayed, because we have fasted, and are serving in church in the choir, you're one of the male voices in the worship team, then well-being and prosperity and good things should be our portion every day of our lives. I believe to a great extent this is true, but sometimes it doesn't go that way. Things may not go as we expect, yet we are right. We have a right standing with God. One of the main things we do, I do a lot of marriage counseling, and I like spending time with young people who are madly in love with each other. They are planning to get married and they are excited. And I normally say, let them go through the premarital counseling classes. Then I'm going to meet with them at the end when they are about to do their wedding. I like now meeting with them and tearing them apart and just, to pieces. And, I like it and so I love one conversation. There's a conversation I love having with all these people. I love having a conversation that I entitle, When Life Happens. I normally ask, have you budgeted for moments when life will be happening to you as couples, as a couple? I ask, have you budgeted for that day when you will, you know, one or two things might happen? I ask, when you go for a long journey and you are a good driver and you have a nice car that has been given to you and you've been given a day or two to prepare that car to go for that journey, what do you do? What do you normally do? You're going for a long journey. You make sure it's serviced. You make sure the tires are okay. You make sure you have a spare wheel and the jack works. And you have jumper cables if you're driving one of these automatic vehicles. And the wipers are working. And just in case, you carry some little Omo. Just in case the wipers refuse to work, you pour on the windscreen and it's raining and you can see. You factor all these things and you make sure you have your driving license. You make sure you carry some extra 10K just in case you are caught over speeding and you can pay. You just make sure you're okay. You budget for the worst case scenario. So we call that person a wise driver. But now we are going on a long journey in marriage and sometimes we don't even budget for the worst case scenario. So these people have never sat down and asked each other, just in case at some point you become overwhelmed by the number of beautiful girls in your office and you feel inclined towards one of them, what will we do? Because that can happen. Or it doesn't happen to Christians. Christians never get tempted, right? Christians never lose their jobs, right? The businesses of Christians never, you know, go through difficulties, right? So what will you do when, just in case one of you loses an income, you have that conversation? We even ask them to have a conversation on just in case one of you dies. What will you do? Okay, I will not come back again. See, Moses should not have been, and before I say that, no, this whole thing that was happening to Moses touches on the mystery of why bad things sometimes happen to good people. Because sometimes they do. And in the midst of that, we must understand that God sometimes does not have to work the way we expect or according to our timelines, but he's still at work. He's still at work. He's still at work. Some of you, your timelines are telling you that it's too late, but you know, he may seem to be late, but he will always be right on time. You know, right on time. He doesn't know. He doesn't come on time. He comes in time. He has his own clock. Moses should not have been surprised by Pharaoh's reaction. In fact, God had warned him what would happen. If he thought that he was to announce that the Pharaoh should release the children of Israel and Pharaoh would immediately consent, then he had not been listening to what God had told him. So sometimes one of our biggest problems is that we don't listen keenly to what God is saying. So God says, you'll get married. Yeah, woohoo! Oh, I'm going to get married. But maybe at 52. Thank God we've already taken the offering, eh? He told Abraham and Sarah, you're gonna have children. I mean, look at the stars, count the sands. You can't count it. You're gonna have children. Woohoo, Sarah. Hey. They were 75. At 100 is when. Well, we need to invest in listening well to the Lord. And then sometimes we run with a word from God, and probably we've not listened properly to what God was saying. Then we get disappointed. Probably we didn't understand the scope of the message and the timelines and the instruments God may use in accomplishing his. Sometimes a bad day at God's work or within God's will becomes unbearable because at the time when God was giving us instructions for that day, we had certain filters, somebody say filters, in our minds that determined our interpretation of what God was saying. And we have like, I can think of three filters right away. There's a filter of optimism, there's a filter of pessimism, and then there's a filter that I love of, you know, being realistic. I don't know. I stumbled across this in a book that most of us have read probably. It's called Good to Great by Jim Collins. And inside there, he talks about a principle he calls the Stockdale Paradox. And you know, the Stockdale Paradox was based on the story of Jim Stockdale. And it suggests this, that it suggests you retain faith that you will prevail in the end, regardless of the difficulties. But at the same time, you confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, no matter what they may be. And Jim Stockdale was one of those prisoners of war in Vietnam. And he says that at some point, among the prisoners, there are those who are optimistic. They had a filter of optimism. And so they would look at the situation and they would say, you know what, before winter, before Christmas, we'll be out of this place. We'll be out of this place. I'm so sure the United States of America will come and rescue us before Christmas. Now, Christmas would come and would pass. And by mid-January, some of them would die because of depression. Then there are those who are pessimists. They are like, hey, the way we've been chapwad here in Vietnam, I don't think anyone will come and rescue us. Those ones died even before Christmas. But then Jim Stockdale says he was among those who were realists. And this is what they would tell themselves. You know, our government may come to rescue us before Christmas, but even if they don't come before Christmas, they will still come before Easter. If not before Easter, they will come at some point. And so they would hang on to everything because at some point, something will change. What are the filters that you're interpreting your day with? And thirdly, when you're having a bad day within God's will, recognize that when problems abound, be careful which way you run. I'll point to the effect that people's responses towards Moses had on him. I mean, Pharaoh had said, I was Mech, and, you know, the Israelites were saying, what kind of person are you? Where were you? First of all, where were you born? I mean, where did you come from? Said, you know, I mean, if they had Twitter, they would like Moses NKT, you know, things like that. I mean, it was terrible. What effect did it have on? I mean, it made him have memories of you know, rejection when he first of all tried to rescue the children of Israel when he was 40 years old. It gave him memories of his inadequacy, and he was like, you know, I told you, God, I'm not the one for this thing. And Moses felt like he would escape and go back to the wilderness and hide. He would run, and he actually ran. But this time he ran straight to his source of strength. He poured out his anxiety to the only one who could answer his questions. Moses returned to the Lord. He could have been tempted to ask, where did I go wrong? But he ran back to God. When things do not go the way we think, we should we begin asking how and why questions. Why me? Why me? Why now? Why did I ever get my hope up? Why did I ever accept this job? If God is on my side, why has this happened to me? Notice God does not reprimand Moses for asking these questions. In fact, he does something amazing. If you read verse 1 of chapter 6, God reassures Moses of his intent and purposes. And God can accommodate our emotions. All right? And God's response was, you know what? Just wait and see. And lastly, when you're having a bad day at God's work or when you're doing God's will, recognize that what you are experiencing is just a small portion of the bigger picture. The beauty about big picture is that God is in charge of the big picture and that his plans and purposes will not fail. He is in charge of the big picture. He reminds Moses that he is the Lord. Too many times we allow ourselves to focus on the difficulties of the moment instead of the God of the universe and the God of the big picture. Turn to your neighbor, tell him, God has your big picture. And so don't get caught up in the hang-ups of your moment, because that's not the entire picture. And sometimes God will not allow you to see the entire picture, but he's in charge of the big picture. He's in charge of the big picture. He's in charge of the big picture. We are reminded in the New Testament, in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, let us run with endurance the race set before us, looking unto Jesus, who is the author and the finisher of our faith. He can see the end from the beginning. He has the big picture. So for him to allow the thing that you're going through to happen to you, in as much as you've been faithfully serving him, there's a reason why he has some wisdom in doing that, because he has the big picture. He knows how it will turn out. Until you fix your eyes on Jesus, you'll not be able to handle those days that go from bad to worse. When your schedule presses, when your prospects thin, when your hope burns low, when people disappoint you, when events turn against you, when your dreams die, and walls close in, and the prognosis seems grim, when your heart breaks, Charles Swindoll tells us, look at the Lord and keep looking on him, because he has the big picture. I think I need to stop there. The fact that you set out to do God's will and things have not turned out. You did the right thing. You know, you are faithful. You know, you observed holiness in your dating, and now you're married and things are moving from bad to worse. Someone has lost a job. You're not getting children. You have 3 miscarriages down the road. And you're still doing whatever is right. You're still trying to be faithful to God. And I feel I need to encourage somebody here. And maybe you could encourage them on my behalf. Tell them you just don't know. You just don't know what's the big picture. Remain faithful in that small picture, because God is at work. God is at work. And Moses keeps running back to God. I think when the day goes bad, the best you can do is run back to God, because he's in charge of the big picture. over your small situation. So when your day goes bad, remember these things, especially if you have sought to walk in God's will. Recognize that your problems are not necessarily an indication that you're outside God's will. Recognize that God does not have to work according to our expectations or timelines. Recognize that when problems abound, be careful of where you run to God. And lastly, recognize that you're just experiencing a small portion of God's plan for your life. And he tells us in Romans 8:28, that all things work together for good to them that love God and are fitting in his plans and purposes. Allow me to pray. Lord God, thank you for today. Thank you for your word towards us today. I want to pray, Lord, for men and women in this place that are, and I sense there are those that have hit a difficult stretch in their lives, in as much as they have sought to be faithful to you to the best of their ability. And there are those who may be asking, why is it happening to me and not to others? And not to others who are much worse than I am. Why should this tragedy visit my family? And yet we are a God-fearing family. Why should these difficulties characterize my life? Yet I've sought to be faithful to God. I pray for such a person in this place that this evening they will walk away with one basic assurance that even when it gets dark and dim, you're still at work. You're still at work. And that they will not lose their hope. They will not let go of that hope. And that they will not let go of their faith in you. And that they will choose to trust you even when it looks dark and dim. Because sometimes you visit us in those spaces of darkness. And so Lord, I pray for strength and encouragement for such. That like Moses was going through a difficult day, may we find the strength to continue serving you and to continue being faithful. May we be able to say like Job, who said he may not understand what's happening, but his feet will continue following you. And that in due time, after all has been said and done, you will allow us the privilege of seeing the bigger picture of what you are working through. And that we shall allow us to see the fruit of the process you are taking us through, like Moses was able to. And so, Lord, for your people who are going through a difficult season in their lives, let your hand be upon them. In Jesus' name we do pray.